Have you ever listened to someone speak and realized that they're only using buzzwords? Words like, this is my truth, or that is toxic, or I've been gaslit. Maybe they need to unpack something. Perhaps I was even guilty of using that word at one point in time. Here's the problem. Buzzwords being used by society are nothing but fake empathy. Sit back, grab yourself a cup of coffee or whatever it is that you're into. Let's get emboldened.
America. Emboldened.
Great, I feel emboldened.
You don't know the founding fathers. You don't know what they did. You don't know what they sacrificed. We have lost touch with the principles in the Constitution. Nobody's read the Declaration of Independence. You are voting for socialism, and you got what you voted for.
Welcome, Bold Americans, to another episode of America Emboldened. As always, I'm your host, Greg Bolden, here on the America Out Loud Network. Make sure you head over to AmericaOutLoud.news, check out all my colleagues' work, as well as my good co-host friend Chris Michaels, Unleash the Political Hour, 7 p.m. Monday nights on the Talk Radio Network, available on all of your app devices. Just type in America Out Loud News Radio, and you can download that app directly to your device, or you can listen online directly on that website. My wife and I, over the weekend, were watching television together. Now, I do not watch television hardly ever. So for me to sit down with my wife to watch is in and of itself something that's a bit bold to happen in our household. Unless we're watching a Philadelphia Union soccer game, we just don't watch television together. She's into her shows. I'm into reading articles and books, although she's into reading books too. I don't want to make it sound like she only watched television. But she has a guilty pleasure of watching Lifetime movies and television shows, some Learning Channel shows. She likes the Married at First Sight show on Lifetime, and she had an episode of it up, and I'm watching the show, and I get about, I don't know, 15 minutes in, and I'm absolutely hooked by the psychology of what I see happening and unfolding on the screen in front of me. If you don't know the concept behind Married at First Sight, it's where they take two strangers who talk to some doctors and psychologists that are having relationship, maybe trouble finding that special someone, but they really want to be married. They really want to be in a committed relationship. So they pair them up as an arranged marriage, and they must get married immediately upon first sight. They walk up the aisle, and that is the first time they've ever seen each other, spoken to each other, all of that. They say their vows, which is just absolutely crazy when you think about the psychology behind this. They go through their vows, and then they're married, and they go immediately on a honeymoon that Lifetime pays for them. I will say, in defense of this show, they have psychologists that are meeting and talking to the, I want to say contestants, but that's what it really feels like, these participants in this experiment, because that's really what they are. They're an experiment for fodder, for advertisers, and us to watch. Let's not get lost in translation here. But as we're watching, they get 90 days, and then they have to decide, are they going to get divorced, or are they going to stay together? And I could not help but notice, and my wife could not help but notice, the buzzwords that are being used by these individuals when they're having conversations. And it seemed very disingenuous. All of these individuals, and there's five individuals that are being followed, are using words like, well, let's unpack that. Well, you know, that's your truth, and you should live your truth. You know, my trauma that I brought into things, or, well, I'm on a self-discovery right now, and this is my journey, and you're on your journey. Or, you know, well, I've been gaslit in the past. Well, I've had toxic relationships. Oh, that's a red flag for me. You know all these buzzwords. They go on and on and on. But when you listen to people speak these in conversations that are recorded, immediately, I appreciate what the show has done. The show has actually exposed that this is nothing but fake empathy. There is no real feelings here. And so, yes, people, they use fake empathy by using terminology or phrases, but they never genuinely listen to others. they never authentically respond to other people's emotions. And I think this is a problem in psychology. I think that this is a form of manipulation. I think this is a form of changing a social construct by creating a social strategy rather than a sincere attempt to understand what other people are going through and connect with their feelings. Because as I said last week, yes, feelings matter, but what is the subjective and objective truth behind all of this? Now, some individuals can learn socially acceptable phrases repeatedly, or they get their behaviors and they associate them with being empathetic for truly putting themselves in somebody else's shoes. And right now, I think that we have that in society, in our schools. As a public school teacher, I certainly see this. When we tell everybody that, oh, it's okay, that's your truth, that's your journey, you're okay here. But it's not. It's not okay. And it's better just to tell somebody, you're not okay. It's better to tell somebody, yeah, everybody has some form of anxiety, but you gotta learn to work through it. You can't get stuck in it. You can't use what you're going through as your trauma, putting in quotes, of your shared experience, putting in quotes. You see what I'm doing with these buzzwords? Let's go back to my grandfather. I was thinking about him earlier today. My grandfather died when I was 12 years old. George Bolden was a soldier in World War II. He traveled overseas and fought for you and I in a war where millions of people lost their lives throughout the globe. That is a fact. He saw things that you and I have luckily never had to see because we have not been in that type of war environment that existed during World War II. Now, some of my listeners, you might have served during the Gulf War or Operation Iraqi Freedom or Afghanistan, and for that, I thank you sincerely for your service. You have seen things that I can't imagine. You have heard the stories, the horror, the lived experiences. Yes, that's a buzzword. You've heard all of these things, and for that, I thank you for your service, and I am also truly sorry that you've had to do that, but I'm grateful for you for doing that for me. That is true empathy. That is an authentic statement from me. I'm acknowledging that those individuals have actual trauma. When we talk about, well, this is my trauma, I got yelled at too much when I was little. This is my trauma, I used to get spanked. This is my trauma, you know, I used to have a belt come out and hit me by my father, which did not happen in my household, just for the record, but I know it happened at my neighbor's homes because I witnessed it with my bare eyes. Now, is that trauma? Or is trauma seeing somebody on the beach in Normandy shredded? Is trauma watching somebody lose a limb? Now, yes, there are traumas in our cities right now. That is something we should be cognizant of, that we do have youth. We do have families being torn apart by gang violence, by drug violence, and those individuals certainly do have a trauma-informed experience. And yes, I understand the buzzword there is being used, and no, it's not ironic. I'm simply pointing out that there are people and individuals that get to use that word and mean it authentically as part of their experience. But if I start talking about my traumas pale in comparison of the traumas of my grandfather or my great uncle Joe. My great uncle Joe, I'll never forget the story. I flew to Denver, Colorado. I was in a relationship when I was in college, and we hit some really bad turbulence. I had never been on an airplane before. I'm squeezing the right-hand side of the aisle seat with my right hand, and my left hand is squeezing my girlfriend's hand. I'm scared. I'm scared because I see people genuflecting. If those that don't know what genuflecting is, they're making the sign of the cross. Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen. It's something the Catholics do. I see this on the plane in front of me. I see the flight attendants looking crazy. And apparently there were tornadoes in the area as we were landing into Denver. So as we were coming down, we were losing like 4,000, 5,000 feet of altitude from these massive air pockets from it. I was scared out of my mind. I did not want to get back on another plane after that. I just wanted to live in Colorado the rest of my life with my girlfriend and her family. Well, I did get back on a plane, you know, 2 weeks later, and I did fly back to the East Coast, and it was actually an easy flight. It was no turbulence, and I discovered not every single flight is the hell on air that I experienced that time. But I shared this story because my great Uncle Joe, I come back and he asked me, because he knew I was nervous about flying for the first time. He said, "Well, how was your flight?" I said, "Well, the flight out there, I thought I was going to die." And he sits there and he's smoking his pipe and he says, "Well, why is that?" I said, "Well, we were hitting all these air pockets. We were like losing altitude." And he goes, "And did you crash?" I said, "No, we didn't crash. We landed." He said, "Well, see, you're okay." He said, "You know that plane, it can land with one engine. It can fly with one engine." And I said, "Yeah, but I don't want my planes to fly or land with one engine." And he said, "Well, let me tell you what happened to me." He said, "In World War II, I was in the Air Force and my airplane took on fire and blew out one of my engines. And I had flames shooting out my right engine. And I safely landed the plane with all of our crew safe and intact when we landed to the ground." He said, "If I can land on a plane as it's on fire, then you can fly on a plane hitting a little bit of air pockets. I think you're going to be okay." That is perspective. That was me listening to his experience and realizing I have not been through the trauma that I thought that I had been through until Uncle Joe so carefully laid it out and said, "Listen, you jackass, this is what is actually happening during that plane flight. And you did nothing compared to your great uncle sitting in front of you here. I'm the one that actually felt through. And guess what? I don't even call it my trauma. I see it as a job well done. I landed the plane like I was supposed to, and mission accomplished." All right. So listening to other people, understanding their perspective, and responding in a way that demonstrates that we care and have concern for their feelings, that is what Uncle Joe did in that moment. He was listening to me, he saw my perspective, and he had care, but he wanted to let me know it could have been so much worse and you still would have been okay. How many people need to be told that right now? That yes, you think this is bad? Guess what? Life can get a lot worse and yet you're still going to be okay. I often think about some of the health struggles that I had in my life where I told myself, I may not make it. I may not be on this planet for very long. I kind of like it here, so I hope I'm wrong. But I've told myself these type of things. And what I realized is, I look around and I see these people carrying like 300 extra pounds on their bodies, eating fast food every day, and they're still alive. Or these people that are literally kept alive by pharmaceuticals, and they're still alive. And I go, huh, the body is pretty damn resilient. But you know what? When it's my time, it's going to be my time. That is the reality. I don't need false platitudes and buzzwords to tell me how this is my journey and every journey is the same. No, it's not. We're all having a shared experience together. And therefore, maybe it's a journey, but I don't need to use the buzzword in order to make people feel better about where their journey is. We are born into fortunate situations and unfortunate situations. Some of us have luck. Some of us have bad luck. That is just the way that it is. I cannot create a better world for other individuals if I fake empathy. If you and I fake empathy, or we just don't invest time or effort into understanding other people's emotions, then we lack depth of connection. I lack a depth of connection for people that lost their loved ones because I've been so fortunate for such a long time, and I know that that's probably going to run out eventually here, of not really losing a lot of people that I was close to. My grandparents, my grandfather and grandmother on my dad's side. Grandfather, as I said earlier, passed away when I was 12. Grandmother passed away when I was 19, a freshman in college. I remember that the most hurtful part of my grandmother was knowing that she was sick with cancer for several months and no one told me because they did not want me to be worried while I was at college. They wanted me to concentrate on my grades and to continue the focus on doing well in school. And so when I dismissed, I only had about 3 weeks with my grandmother before she was laying in hospice care at my aunt's house and she passed away. That, sure, That's an emotional thing that I went through. But today I started thinking about, what did my grandmother's face feel like during a hug? What did my grandfather's face feel like when he bent down and hugged me as a 12-year-old? I still remember the stubble of my grandfather's face, but I cannot remember truly and well their voices. And I started thinking about that because I never met my mom's parents, my grandparents on my mom's side. They passed away when my mother was 18 years old. And that is something I'll never know what a hug from them would have felt like, but I also never knew their voices. And so I lack a bit of empathy, a depth of connection to my mother and the experience and trauma that she went through. But here's how I can find it. My wife lost her father when she was 16 years old. And I, as a result, never met her dad. We met after he had passed. And so when she talks about losing a parent and me having both my parents, you know, I can call them up. I can hear their voice. I can get a hug from them. But if I really think about my grandparents and the fact that I don't remember their voices extremely well, that I'd like to hear my grandfather's voice again or my grandmother's voice again, that's the experience of those that have lost parents. And when you start to sit with that and you start thinking, wow, that's the depth of the connection that was lost, that's where empathy lives. See, it's possible that we can fake empathy with terminology. But the true empathy that we need to find is not found in buzzwords. Right now, it's found in genuine emotional engagement. And that means we have to have an emotional IQ enough that we can comprehend what another person's going through and understand it. Buzzwords take us out of that. Buzzwords are taking you to a spot where you're going to sound intelligent and authentic. You'll say to somebody, tell me more about your truth. I want to know about this journey that you've been on. I'm so sorry that you've been gaslit. I've been gaslit too. You're on a self-discovery and you can be whatever you want to be. That's a trauma-informed response that you had there, and I understand. These are empty things that psychologists say in order to get us to think deeply. They're not empathy, and it's fake. And society would do better if we eliminated them. But it's not just society that uses buzzwords. It's politicians, too. And guess what? Politicians really don't care about you either. At least the ones on these global stages, they care about the millions of dollars going into their pockets. Because if they did care about you, they tell it like it is. Now in politics, buzzwords are just as much a problem. There's many that you've already heard, and I'm sure that my listeners are familiar with. But one that caught my ire just over the last several days is when Joe Biden was talking at his State of the Union, and he referred to an illegal immigrant. And he was corrected by Nancy Pelosi as that is an undocumented migrant. And so they asked Joe Biden whether or not he should have called them illegals. And he said, oh, no, I regret that. That's an undocumented migrant. I shouldn't have used the word illegals. Why? Let me ask you, as a buzzword, if we're no longer allowed to call them illegal immigrants, please define this for me. If at 2 o'clock in the morning, you open my front door, there's one of two different types of people that are going to open my front door. One is a family member that has a key and belongs here legally because I gave them permission to enter into my home. The second is somebody who has forced their way or snuck in illegally and therefore has illegally entered my home. It's as simple as that, Joe. There's no other explanation, no other buzzword that is necessary in order for you to be woke. Yes, I'm using another buzzword the left loves. The left, that's another buzzword. If you caught that, good for you. Well, we're going to get into all that. But first, let's just talk about the illegal thing. Illegal immigration is people that are coming over our border without any documentation, which, yes, also makes them undocumented illegals. And they are migrants because they are migrating from one other place to here. So that is the illegal undocumented migrant. Let's call it what it is. Face value. Now, if somebody hops in their car with a passport, somebody from Mexico has gone through the proper measures driving in, or from Canada is coming up to our border, and they show all that paperwork, you know what we call that? We call that legal entry into our country. Why is it that the Democratic Party, our president, Nancy Pelosi, want to remove the stigma of the word illegal, which is the actual representation of the word, and replace it with their buzzword, undocumented migrants? Well, that's because they want you to get to accept that all of these individuals are pouring into the country, that there is an influx of migrants. Now, Trump, when he was president, had a very strict policy. He did not want an influx of illegal migrants. President Biden reversed all of that. And as a result, about 2 million people are pouring over our borders per year. I've covered this. Just in the time that President Biden has been president, there have been close to 6 million illegals coming into the country. So, why is it that we're changing language? Well, it's because when we use buzzwords in politics, we create an oversimplification of a complex political problem. See, the policy ideas that Donald Trump uses, make America great again, that's just a catchphrase, a slogan, it's a buzzword. It's completely an oversimplification. As a result, it might be memorable. It can be easy to repeat, to print on red hats, put on red t-shirts for Marjorie Taylor Greene to wear. And they can oversimplify, though, what the actual issue is. Which part of America are we making great again? That is valid criticism of the Trump side of the oversimplification of things. It leads to no understanding from the public of complex problems. It enables a Republican to say, well, this is what Trump means. And a Democrat to say, no, I think that this is what he means. He wants to take us back to slavery. Now, any common sense would say, no, you're both wrong, probably where you're from, but it's because the buzzwords will oversimplify an issue. They also polarize. Buzzwords will take us into political ideologies, ideologues, and their positions. They reinforce the division that's already between us and our society. And so when we frame everything through polarizing buzzwords, and this is that illegal versus undocumented, how are we supposed to have a nuanced discussion? How are we supposed to find any common ground with our neighbors across the aisle on the other side of how you may think, you may believe? And then we get into emotional manipulation. See, buzzwords like AOC going down to the border, you remember that during Trump, to see the children in cages and she's crying. Well, that's just to give a strong emotional response from the viewer. They remove emotional charged language like illegals, and the politicians and media outlets then can manipulate your opinion, and they shape a narrative around the specific issue. And then that stops, stifling the debate and the critical thinking around it all. Don't believe me? Think about this buzzword, CRT, critical race theory. Now, critical race theory was, if we go back to the original definition of the word, was a study of how racism was brought into our laws. And this was explained by Richard Rothstein in his book, The Color of Law. And a good example with that is redlining. If you don't know what redlining is, it was where they designated minority neighborhoods where mortgage approval and social services funds were discouraged. All right. Now, CRT also means in the modern context that we teach the things that are a little bit uglier about United States history, the things that don't fit. Here's a buzzword for you: U.S. exceptionalism. All right, that's a buzzword. What it means to be American exceptionalism. meaning we might teach the 1891 lynching of Italian immigrants back when Italians were viewed as black people the same way. However, what I was getting into when I said, when we look at how they change, and when I say they, it's whatever side, the emotional manipulation, emotionally, here's where that has gone. Now, politically, CRT has lost that original meaning from The Color of Law and Richard Rothstein, and now it's used by politicians to describe there's this big plot to make white kids feel guilty for being white, or referred to as white children are snowflakes. And guess what? Because it's been so successful in creating that, there's now a polarization where people are going, well, yeah, you should own your white guilt. Yeah, you should sit with your white shame. Well, that's part of the emotional manipulation, the oversimplification of buzzwords and the polarization. Guess what? There's people that understand this psychology that are using it both on a social context that I talked about the first half of the show and a political context of what I'm talking about now in the show. Also, when we use buzzwords, it dismisses any alternative view because then they become just a rhetorical statement. They just oppose the other person's viewpoints. They delegitimize whatever dissent may be in the room left. And so when we take these complex issues and we just bring them down to the buzzwords, we can caricaturize an opposing perspective. We can label them as snowflakes, meaning they're illegitimate or unworthy of our consideration. It's a psychological game that continues to be played. On my show, I realized that I was doing this when I called a liberal or a conservative, that I wasn't even understanding that that meaning of those words has changed because they've been used as buzzwords for the last two decades. And it no longer means the way I grew up understanding both of those terms. Now the word liberal is used much like the word woke. It's when it's used to refer to a group of individuals that I think you should be against. But that's not how I was using it. I was using liberal as people that believe more in socialist and progressive policies that take us further away or expand our government from what I believe should be a limited government or take us away from constitutional law and constitutional values. Now, the word conservative, on the other hand, is now the opposite of progressive, and people have weaponized that word as a buzzword to mean that it's people that are racist. It's people that are the extreme element of the Republican Party. So now I even have to be careful when I refer to people either as Republicans, and even that I think has gotten a weird spot in it. I have to watch. Because I know that by using these words, liberal or conservative, that people will dismiss the alternative view because they think that I'm using a buzzword instead of actually caring about another person's point of view. This is a major issue. We also live in a soundbite culture. I had a friend over the weekend, and this is not part of buzzwords, but just kind of something to think about here, sent me a video about Boeing that Al Jazeera did, and people were linking this to DEI, but I did what I normally do. I was just like, I wonder where this video actually contextually comes from. It's a 1 minute clip. Let's see if there's a larger, and I was able to track it down rather quickly. It was almost 10 years old, but yet people are using this video from 10 years ago when the conversation wasn't about DEI and now saying, look, Boeing has a DEI problem. Look at all these issues. Well, that's quick to find the soundbite. Or when we find a soundbite of Donald Trump slurring his words that go, well, look, he's having mental decline too. Or picking a soundbite from Joe Biden that's only 5 seconds long and saying, well, look what he did. It's completely dismissing for people's communication needs what really happened in that moment. You know what? That's shallow. And that fragments our ability to have any meaningful public discourse. And buzzwords now are used by politicians and media outlets, and this creates a distrust. You remember fake news, Donald Trump, when he said that? Well, that created a sense of distrust in the political institutions, draining the swamp, that was a buzzword, and all the media sources. That becomes another manipulation and deception. It furthers the erodes our trust of the political process. It leads us to not trust the political and public discourse that needs to happen in our country so that way we can effectively communicate. So buzzwords are not just a problem in our relationships because it's hurting our empathy, but it's a problem in our politics because it's taking what used to be effective communication by talking and now just labeling certain ideologies. And it's continuing to polarize us. The only way we can actually possibly move on from the buzzwords is for individuals to critically think about the language that's being used in political talk. When you listen to the president speak, and that goes for whichever president you are more favored listening to as a candidate right now, what are they saying? What's the deeper understanding to a complex issue that they're trying to get to? Both, I think you'll find, are pretty empty. I mean, Joe Biden, I think, gave the same speech from 3 years ago. And then last year to this year, seriously, him saying he's a capitalist. He's not a capitalist. In that same speech, he just got done telling you that he was going to mandate the federal government to price limit other businesses, such as the pharmaceutical companies or the snack companies that were shorting you product in your snacks. That is anti-capitalist. But notice how he says, folks, I'm a capitalist. Because if you say I'm a capitalist, how could you be making a statement after that that is anti-capitalism? See, when you start listening to the language, you start paying attention to what's being used, you realize that the buzzwords that are being used by politics and society are nothing but fake understanding. And that's why I said it's fake empathy at the top of the show. And that leads to one final question today. When did it become okay for us to talk to everybody about politics and religion with others? Growing up, I remember my parents saying, well, there's two things you never talk about. You don't talk about politics with other people, and you certainly don't talk about your religion with other people. That's taboo unless it's family and you know people really well and they share the same things. Well, obviously, here I am with a podcast talking to you all, my bold American audience. So I didn't listen well to mother about not talking about politics because I talk about it almost daily in some way, shape, or form. But religion's the other part. You know, I served as a youth minister for several years at a church. Obviously, I had to talk about faith. I had to talk about religion. But I did that within a construct. I did that within a system where everybody that was there was wanting to hear that. I often wasn't going out and preaching the word, so to speak, to the unchurched in order to convert or to change a mind and combat another viewpoint. Well, I believe that we've evolved greatly over the last 20 years, and it's because of the same buzzword manipulation. I don't know that there was a particular moment where it became okay to talk about politics and religion. I don't know that we've really shifted in the way that we feel about people that talk about this, because I still know that it annoys the absolute living hell out of people that I personally know, friends of mine, that I even do this show. They're like, I have a lot of people that listen to the show. And matter of fact, I was just at a fish fry, and a friend that I've had for years since high school said to me, he's like, keep doing what you're doing. He said, I really think you're doing important work and you're having important conversations. And I, you know, oftentimes I tell my listeners this all the time. I don't know really who's tuning in, who's listening, but hearing him say that, I appreciated it, right? Now, that's not to say that he agrees with everything that I've probably ever said, and I'm okay with that too. But there's people that are okay with me having these conversations, and then you have people that are like, I can't believe that you're having a show, and why are people listening to your opinions and viewpoints? Well, likely because I believe I'm doing it in a way that I try to have sensitivity, I try to have respect and an openness to differing perspectives, even while I have my own perspective. I think that when I'm doing interviews with other people, I'm trying to dig deeper for understanding to be productive and have a respectful engagement with another individual. Now that we have all these new communication technologies out there, we have social media, We have an increase in a diverse workplace, a diverse schooling system. We have cultural values that have greatly shifted. Well, now we have a society that's talking about it. But why is it then politics and religion specifically become intertwined with one another? Well, it's because I believe that the politicians want you to confuse politics for religion. When I think about Turning Point USA, when I think about General Flynn, the reawakening tour, I can't help but notice the Christian perspective of religion tied into both of those movements. Now, we have a separation in the First Amendment of church and state. We have respect for both church and state. So while you have the freedom to discuss, church is not supposed to get in bed with the state, and the state is not supposed to get in bed with the church. I think back to Dorothy Day. Dorothy Day was a Catholic anarchist, and she did not believe that the church should have anything to do with the government. In fact, she's a saint as labeled by the Catholic Church at this point in time. She struggled most of her life in trying to figure out how to bring in the conversation about poverty. She liked the fact that the United States tried to take responsibility through government, but she felt that the charitable works were actually something that did not rely on government, but relied on the warmth of society. And so she saw sins against the poor. She saw that there were people being deprived of being a laborer. She saw that there were people that were doing advertising that was a woe to the generation because they made the poor people willing to sell liberty and honor to satisfy the desires of the advertisers. She was opposed to Social Security because she felt they would make you a slave to the states. She felt that everybody was each other's brother. And as a result, she wrote about how different people like Lenin and Marx and Mao were animated by the love of each other, and they believed through their ends meant that there should be a seizure of power. And to, at that point in time, find a way for everybody to work together, find humanity in everyone. Now, I don't agree with Dorothy Day in some of her views of Marxism, but I don't believe she agreed with Marxism as a complete total either. She really identified with the anarchist. She identified with those that believed in the power of people, which in the Declaration of Independence, I believe we put that very well, that everybody had the ability for the pursuit of happiness, and making sure that the government did not take that away from anyone. Right now, we have individuals that are trying to put conservatism, Republican Party, and the Catholic faith together as if they are one and the same. They're not. See, if you go back to the framers understood that there was something larger than themselves. But if I were to ask the average American, were the framers of the Constitution, were they Christian? Well, a lot of them did attend church. A lot of them did identify with Christian denominations. But that did not mean that they were all Christian. Some were traditional. You have John Lay. You also have deists that had no Christian beliefs, like Thomas Paine. So why did all these founders have a commitment to a secular nation with no established religion? Well, it's because they understood the separation was very important. So why is it that the Republican Party and some of those in it, like General Flynn, are trying to tie us back as a Christian nation for American exceptionalism? Well, I think that's because, as a buzzword, if you can get your religion as politics, well, we're all going to be worshiping a different golden calf. And so that is why, if you want to know why I oftentimes will look at General Flynn with kind of a side eye, it's because I'm wondering what this intent is behind his buzzwords and the movement that he and others are a part of, and whether or not there's anything genuine about it for our country. So here's the challenge. Where can you spot the language of politics, the language of those loved ones around you and your neighbors? And how can we convert hearts to listen twice as hard as we speak and to find understanding over platitudes of words that are buzzy in order to let other individuals know that we care and that we're looking at all sides? Hope I honored your time well, ladies and gentlemen, giving you some food for thought. I know I've been deep in thought as I've been delivering this episode to the audience. As always, if you'd like to help out to support the show, patreon.com/AmericaEmboldened. Head over there and sign up. You got subscriptions over there, as well as you can just sign up for general newsletter type information. Very soon, we're going to start our meet and greets where you can meet different parts of people from the show, including myself. We're going to have hangouts. So you're going to want to go over to the Patreon page to be a part of that. The community of Bold Americans is growing, and for that, I am grateful to both the America Out Loud News Network for bringing me on here, where I have a large reach, as well as all my guests who help continue to help grow the show. Without all of you, I couldn't do what I do, so I appreciate you, the audience. You've been listening to America Emboldened. Be bold, America.